Hi, this is Mrs. English, and thank you for joining me for Book 10. We're in Paradise Lost, and we are at Book 10. This is my third attempt to record Book 10. Sound cards worked great this morning in classes, and so we'll see if I can manage my way through. Book 10, The Argument. Man's transgression known, the guardian angels forsake paradise and return up to heaven to approve their vigilance, and are approved, God declaring that the entrance of Satan could not be by them prevented. He sends his son to judge the transgressors, who descends and gives sentence accordingly, then in pity clothes them both and reascends. Sin and death, sitting till then at the gates of hell, by wondrous sympathy feeling the success of Satan in this new world, and the sin by man there committed, resolved to sit no longer confined in hell, but to follow Satan their sire up to the place of man to make the way easier from hell to this world to and fro. They pave a broad highway or bridge over chaos according to the track that Satan first made. Then, preparing for earth, they meet him, proud of his success returning to hell. Their mutual congratulation. Satan arrives at Pandemonium in full assembly, relates with boasting his success against man. Instead of applause, is entertained with a general hiss by all his audience, transformed with himself all suddenly into serpents, according to his doom given in paradise. Then, deluded with a show of the forbidden tree springing up before them, they greedily reaching to take of the fruit, chew dust and bitter ashes. The proceedings of sin and death. God foretells the final victory of his Son over them and the renewing of all things, but for the present commands his angels to make several alterations in the heavens and elements. Adam, more and more perceiving his fallen condition, heavily bewails, rejects the condolement of Eve. She perishes and at length appeases him. She persists and at length appeases him, Then, to evade the curse likely to fall on their offspring, proposes to Adam violent ways which he approves not, but conceiving better hope, puts her in mind of the late promise made them, that her seed should be revenged on the serpent, and exhorts her with him to seek peace of the offended deity by repentance and supplication. Line 1. Meanwhile, the heinous, hateful, and despiteful act of Satan done in paradise, and how he and the serpent had prevented Eve, her husband she, to taste the fatal fruit, was known in heaven. For what can scape the eye of God all-seeing, or deceive his heart omniscient, who in all things wise and just, hindered not Satan to attempt the mind of man, with strength entire and free will armed, complete to have discovered and repulsed whatever wiles of foe or seeming friend. So Adam and Eve had everything it took to repulse the wiles, the schemes of a foe or someone who seems like a friend. That was line 10. For still they knew and ought to have still remembered the high injunction not to taste that fruit, whoever tempted, which they not obeying incurred. What could they less, the penalty, and manifold, multiplied in sin, deserved to fall? Up into heaven from paradise in haste the angelic guards ascended, mute and sad, they're silent, and sad for man, for of his state by this they knew, much wondering how this subtle fiend had stolen entrance unseen. They can't figure out how he got in there. That's line 30. Soon as the unwelcome news from earth arrived at heaven gate, displeased all were who heard. Dim sadness did not spare that time celestial visages. These are heavenly faces. Your visage or your countenance is your face. And these lines in 23 and 24, this is a leetote. And what's a leetote? This is an understatement. We actually emphasize it by making an understatement, and they make it in the negative, did not spare. So this is the leetote. Dim sadness did not spare that time celestial visages. You remember that we learned about Leetotes when we read the Battle of Maldon, and the two cowards who ran from battle and ran away, the only thing that our storyteller told us was, they loved not the battle. That's a Leetote. We didn't say, they do not love the battle. They loved not the battle. We use a negative understatement, and in that, we may actually make emphasis. Dim sadness did not spare that time celestial visages, yet mixed with pity violated not their bliss. About the new arrived, in multitudes the ethereal people ran. So the angels come up to say, we're so sorry, but man has fallen. And they get to heaven, and the multitudes surround these heavenly people. To hear and know how all befell, they towards the throne supreme accountable made haste to make appear with righteous plea their utmost vigilance, and easily approved, when the Most High Eternal Father from his secret cloud, amidst in thunder, uttered thus his voice, assembled angels, and ye powers returned from unsuccessful charge, be not dismayed, line 35, nor troubled at these tidings from the earth, which your sincerest care could not prevent. Foretold so lately what would come to pass when first this tempter, Satan, crossed the gulf from hell. I told ye then he should prevail and speed on his bad errand. Man should be seduced and flattered out of all, believing lies against his Maker. No decree of mine concurring to necessitate his fall. So in line 43 and 44, God says, I didn't have to make a decree that they would fall. I just foretold it. Or touch with lightest moment of impulse his free will. So God didn't have to touch his free will and say, and touch him and say, no, don't do it, don't do it. I didn't have to touch his free will. To her own inclining left an even scale. But fallen he is. And now what rests but that the mortal sentence pass on his transgression, his sin? Death denounced that day, which he presumes already vain and void. That's line 50. Adam is probably presuming, God says, that it's already vain and void because they were told they would die, and they haven't died. Because not yet inflicted, as he feared, by some immediate stroke, but soon shall find forbearance no acquittance ere day end. Justice shall not return as bounty scorned. But whom send I to judge them? Whom but thee, vice-regent son? To thee I have transferred all judgment, whether in heaven or earth or hell. Easy it may be seen that I intend mercy colleague with justice. And so he's telling this assembly of angels, and now specifically he's telling the Son, that he is going to mix mercy and justice. Sending thee, man's friend, his mediator, his designed, both ransom and redeemer voluntary, and destined man himself to judge man fallen. Those lines, 61 and 62, are reminiscent of 1 Timothy 2:5, Christ the mediator, for there is one God and one mediator between God and men, the man Christ Jesus. And that's what Milton says here. So spake the Father, and unfolding bright toward the right hand his glory, on the Son blazed forth on clouded deity. He, full resplendent, all his Father manifest expressed, and thus divinely answered mild. So the Son is responding here in line 68. Father eternal, thine is to decree, mine both in heaven and earth to do thy will supreme, that thou in me, thy Son beloved, mayest ever rest well pleased. I go to judge on earth these thy transgressors, your sinners. But thou knowest who ever judged, the worst on me must light, because he has already agreed to take their penalty. Line 74. When time shall be, for so I undertook before thee, and not repenting, this obtain of right, that I may mitigate their doom on me derived. So he's going to appease their doom, so they will not have to die forever. Yet I shall temper so justice with mercy, as may illustrate most them fully satisfied, and thee appeased. Attendance none shall need, nor train where none are to behold the judgment. Okay, so we don't need to have a whole train of people for me to go down and judge them. Just the judged, line 81. Those two. The third best absent is condemned. Who is the third? of the transgressors. Of course, that is Satan. And Milton says it's better to judge him. The Son says it's better to judge him while he's absent. Convict by flight. He's convicted just because he ran away. And rebel to all law. Conviction to the serpent none belongs. Thus saying, from his radiant seat he rose, line 85, of high collateral glory. Collateral glory means he has all the glory of the Father. Collateral glory, parallel, side by side. Him, thrones and powers, princedoms and dominations, ministrant accompanied to heaven gate, from whence Eden and all the coast in prospect lay. Down he descended straight, the speed of God's time counts not. So Christ is very fast, line 90. Though with swiftest minutes winged, now was the sun in western cadence low. So it's swinging low. Cadence is a type of rhythmic movement. Cadence low from noon, and gentle airs do at their hour to fan the earth now waked, and usher in the evening cool. All right, how is the earth waked? Earth felt the fall. Earth felt the fall when Eve sinned. And now we're going to have coolness, a cool breeze coming in the evening. And remember, Adam and Eve are not clothed. Line 95. When he from wrath more cool came the mild judge and intercessor both to sentence man. The voice of God they heard now walking in the garden by soft winds brought to their ears while day declined. They heard, and from his presence hid themselves among the thickest tree. Line 100. Both man and wife, till God approaching thus to Adam, called aloud, "Where art thou, Adam? Want with joy to meet me my coming, see far off? I miss thee here, not pleased, thus entertained with solitude." Okay, I don't exactly like standing around by myself, God says, 105. "Where obvious duty erewhile appeared unsought? Or come I less conspicuous?" Okay, didn't I stomp loud enough, or am I not conspicuous enough? "Or what change absence thee, or what chance detains? Come forth." He came, and with him Eve, more loath, though first to offend, discountenanced both. Remember, your visage or your countenance is your face. If they are discountenanced, they're coming with long, sad faces. And discomposed, line 110. Love was not in their looks. This is another leetote. We have an understatement, a negative understatement to make an emphasis. Love was not in their looks, either to God or to each other, but apparent guilt and shame and perturbation, that means they're agitated, they're perturbed, and despair, anger, and obstinacy, and hate, and guile. Whence Adam, faltering long, thus answered brief. That was line 115. So Adam's faltering. "But I heard thee in the garden, and of thy voice, afraid, being naked, hid myself." To whom the gracious judge, without revile, replied, "My voice thou oft hast heard and hast not feared, but still rejoiced. How is it now become so dreadful to thee that thou art naked? Who hath told thee? Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I gave thee charge thou shouldst not eat?" To whom thus Adam, sore beset, replied, "Oh, heaven!" Line 125. Notice that before now, Adam has replied, "O gracious Father," he has used beautiful epithets, and now he's exasperated. In 125, "O heaven, in evil strait this day I stand before my judge, either to undergo myself the total crime, or to accuse my other self, the partner of my life." So he's saying out loud. Normally this would be a soliloquy, but Adam it just stands before God and says his thoughts. "I stand before my judge. I either have to undergo the whole crime myself, or I have to accuse my other self, accuse Eve, who is the partner of his life. He doesn't know what to do. Whose failing, while her faith to me remains, I should conceal and not expose to blame by my complaint. But strict necessity subdues me, and calamitous constraint, lest on my head both sin and punishment, however insupportable, be all devolved. Though should I hold my peace, yet thou wouldst easily detect what I conceal." So Adam says, I really should protect her and not tell, but then I can't. You would know. And strict necessity, I can't let it come on all on me. And if I held my peace and didn't tell, you would easily detect what I conceal. 1:3:6. This woman whom thou madest to be my help, this is right out of Genesis. I think this is in 3:12. Blaming not only the woman, but blaming God. This woman whom thou madest to be my help and gavest me as thy perfect gift, so good, so fit, so acceptable, so divine, that from her hand I could suspect no ill. And what she did, whatever in itself her doing seemed to justify the deed, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat. To whom the sovereign presence thus replied, Was she thy God, that her thou didst obey before his voice, or was she made thy God superior, or but equal, that to her thou didst resign thy manhood? Did you just resign your manhood? Aren't you a man? And the place wherein God set thee above her, made of thee, and for thee, whose perfection far excelled hers in all real dignity, adorned she was indeed, and lovely to attract thy love, not thy subjection. And her gifts were such as under government well seemed, okay, her gifts, as long as they were controlled under government, Adam's government, well they seemed, unseemly to bear rule, this is line 155, which was thy part and person, hadst thou known thyself aright. And so God is saying, she was made from you, she was made of you, and you blew it. So having said, he thus to Eve in few, Say, woman, what is this which thou hast done? To whom sad Eve, with shame nigh overwhelmed, 1:5:9, confessing soon, yet not before her judge, bold or loquacious, thus abashed replied, The serpent me beguiled, and I did eat. Eve is very straightforward, we have to give her that. Which when the Lord God heard, without delay to judgment he proceeded on the accused serpent, though brute, unable to transfer the guilt on him who made him instrument of mischief and polluted from the end of his creation. Justly then accursed, as vitiated or as invalid in nature, more to know concerned not man, since he no further knew, line 170, nor altered his offense. Yet God at last, to Satan first in sin, his doom applied, though in mysterious terms, judged as then best. So Adam doesn't know all that happens with judging the serpent. And on the serpent thus his curse let fall, line 175, Because thou hast done this, thou art accused, accursed, above all cattle, each beast of the field, upon thy belly groveling thou shalt go, and dust shalt eat all the days of thy life. Between thee and the woman I will put enmity, and between thine and her seed shall bruise thy head, thou bruise his heel. So spake this oracle, then verified when Jesus, son of Mary, second Eve, saw Satan fall like lightning down from heaven. That's line 184. I am sure that you are all stopping now and looking in your multiple commentaries that you have downloaded from eSword for free and taking a look to see, is this some type of heresy? Is this a metaphor? What on earth is this? If you want to make a note, you can look up in Luke 10:18 and you'll read that Jesus does say in Luke 10:18, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Now, whether this is a metaphor or whether this is true, I do not know. The commentaries argue, but it is very interesting. 1:8:5, Prince of the air, then rising from his grave, spoiled principalities and powers, triumphed in open show and with ascension bright, captivity led captive through the air, the realm itself of Satan long usurped, whom he shall tread at last under our feet, even he who now foretold his fatal bruise. And to the woman thus his sentence turned. This is God to Eve. Thy sorrow I will greatly multiply by thy conception. Children thou shalt bring in sorrow forth, and to thy husband's will thine shall submit. He over thee shall rule. If you have stopped and read Genesis now, congratulations. If not, this is a good time. I just finished line 196. take a look at Genesis chapters 1, 2, and 3. And that way you can track Milton and see, does he follow the Genesis text or what does he make up? It's very interesting that Milton's interpretation of this section of Scripture is really not as accurate as the Genesis text, and that's what I would suspect. But this particular section, this particular verse, Eve's curse, not only childbearing, but that her husband's will she'll have to submit to and he will rule over her. Part of this curse is also that her desire to rule over him. That is a curse for her to desire to rule over him. Line 197. Now God speaks to Adam. On Adam last thus judgment he pronounced. Because thou hast hearkened to the voice of thy wife, and eaten of the tree concerning which I charged thee, saying, Thou shalt not eat thereof. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. Thou in sorrow shalt eat thereof all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles it shall bring forth. It shall bring thee forth unbid. And thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face thou shalt eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For thou out of the ground wast taken. Know thy birth, for dust thou art, and dust, and shalt to dust return. This statement, know thy birth, for dust thou art, and shalt to dust return, is worthy of our note. We know that we're dust, and that we will return to dust. This we realize is biblical. The statement, know thy birth, is very interesting because it is almost a pagan allusion. The two aphorisms that were written on Apollo's oracle at Delphi were, know thyself and nothing in excess. We moderns have reinterpreted know thyself to mean find out your true inner self, find your inner child, get to know yourself. And that was not the attempt of this oracle. That was could have been 1000 BC. This oracle, when it says know thyself, and it might be that Milton is echoing that here, know thy birth, means know that you are nothing human. Know that I as God can squash you any instant. And this would be a little bit classical, and it's hard to say whether Milton employs this as a warning. Know thy birth. Don't think too highly of yourself. Line 209. So judged he man, both judge and savior sent, and the instant stroke of death denounced that day removed far off. Then pitying how they stood before him naked to the air, that now must suffer change. Okay, even the air will suffer change. We're going to have climate changes. Disdained not to begin henceforth the form of servant to assume, as when he washed his servants' feet. So now, as father of his family, he clad their nakedness with skins of beasts or slain, or as the snake with youthful coat repaid, and thought not much to clothe his enemies, nor he their outward only with the skins of beasts, but inward nakedness, much more opprobrious, or shameful, or disgraceful, with his robe of righteousness, covered from his father's sight. To him with swift ascent he upreturned, into his blissful bosom reassumed. Line 225. Reassumed in glory as of old, to him appeased all, though all-knowing, what had passed with man recounted, mixing intercession sweet. Meanwhile, ere thus was sinned and judged on earth, within the gates of hell sat sin and death. Line 230. In counterview within the gates that now stood open wide, belching outrageous flame far into chaos, since the fiend passed through, sin opening, who thus now to death began. So sin is speaking to death. O son, why sit we here each other viewing idly, while Satan our great author thrives in other worlds, and happier seat provides for us his offspring dear? It cannot be but that success attends him, if mishap ere this he had returned, with fury driven by his avengers, since no place like this can fit his punishment or their revenge. Methinks, I feel new strength within me rise, wings growing, and dominion given me large beyond this deep. So sin is saying, I know that our father, Satan, has had success. Otherwise, he would have been driven back to here by now. And I feel a new strength She can sense something is happening. And dominion given me large beyond this deep. Line 244 and 45. She feels more powerful. Whatever draws me on, or sympathy, or some connatural force, powerful at greatest distance to unite with secret amity, things of like kind, by secretest conveyance. So Sin here says that she can sense somehow that Satan has had success because she can feel it in a type of secret amity, and that is line 249. Book 10 continuing. We are now on line 249. Thou, my shade inseparable, must with me along. So Sin says to Death, you're my shadow. You have to come with me. For Death from Sin no power can separate. But lest the difficulty of passing back stay his return, perhaps over this gulf impassable, impervious, let us try adventurous work, yet to thy power and mine not unagreeable, to found a path over this main from hell, to that new world where Satan now prevails, a monument of merit, high to all the infernal host, easing their passage hence. Line 260. So Sin has sensed that Death has been victorious. She can just tell somehow that Death has been victorious, and she says, we can go and see if we can make a better path. Maybe he has not come home because it's too difficult to pass by. And so they are taking off. Line 260. For intercourse or transmigration, and yes, that word has changed, the use of the word intercourse. It used to be very common for people to use that in reference to having conversations, some type of an interchange or communication. Or transmigration, as their lot shall lead. Nor can I miss the way, so strongly drawn by this new-felt attraction and instinct. So Sin says, we don't even have to worry how to get there, because I can just tell by instinct. I know Satan has been successful. I can tell. Whom thus the meager shadow answered soon. So now Death is speaking to his mother, Sin. 265. Go whither fate and inclination strong leads thee. I shall not lag behind, nor err the way thou leading. Such a scent I draw of carnage, prey innumerable, and taste the savor of death from all things there that live. Nor shall I to the work thou enterprisest be wanting, lacking, but afford thee equal aid. So her son Death says, he will follow her. He can smell the carnage, the prey innumerable. He can taste the savor of death from all things there that live. He can smell the death that will come from everything living. So saying, with delight, he snuffed the smell of mortal change on earth. As when a flock of ravenous fowl, this is our Homeric simile, what is it like as he's smelling out death, smelling the mortal change on earth? As when a flock of ravenous fowl, though many a league remote, against the day of battle, to a field where armies lie encamped, come flying, lured with scent of living carcasses, designed for death the following day. In bloody fight. He is just like a flock of ravenous fowls, vultures or something, that go a long distance before a day of battle and get there, and because of the scent of living carcasses, they know there will be much carnage and death the following day, and they follow that scent. So scented, 279. The grim feature, and upturned his nostril wide into the murky air, sagacious of his quarry from so far. Then both from out of hell gates into the waste, wide anarchy of chaos, damp and dark flew diverse, and with power, their power was great, hovering over the water, what they met solid or slimy, as in raging sea tossed up and down, together crowded drove from each side, shoaling toward the mouth of hell. Fish travel in shores, and this is how they're hovering over the water, traveling toward the mouth of hell. And as they go, slimy, ugly things, solid or slimy, crowd with them looking for this mouth of hell. And what's it like? As when two polar winds blowing adverse upon the Cronian Sea together drive mountains of ice that stop the imagined way beyond Pistora eastward to the rich Cathian coast, the aggregated soil, death with his mace petrific, cold and dry. Now, I need to explain. They're just like two winds who blow onto the sea and drive mounds of ice up so that it stops. This is how they're building this causeway or this road that they talk about to make it easier for their father Satan to get back. They're making a pathway for him. It's like when two winds blow and you actually have icebergs move and block away. The aggregate soil, death with his mace petrific. And petrific is petrified. And what is a mace? A mace is a club. It can actually break armor. It's a very strong club. Or a mace is a staff that's used as a symbol of authority. Death is carrying this staff. And we're going to have a simile here, line 295, that makes a comparison of death holding this mace or staff to Poseidon. And of course, Poseidon, or Neptune, god of the sea, that's what he held, was this trident. It looks like a pitchfork. The aggregate soil, death with his mace petrific, cold and dry, as with a trident, smote. So he hits the soil, the aggregate soil, with his mace, just like Poseidon would with a trident, and fixed as firm as Delos, floating once, the rest, his look, bound with Gorgonian rigor not to move, and with asphaltic slime, broad as the gate, deep to the roots of hell, the gathered beach they fastened. So he is pushing the soil with his mace, just as Poseidon would touch something with his trident, and just as the winds would blow icebergs up to hold something together. 300. And the mole immense wrought on over the foaming deep, high arched. A mole is a barrier of stone built through water to protect you from the waves. Imagine the parting of the Dead Sea, imagine the parting of the Red Sea, but without God raising the sides up, however he did it, doing it with rocks. That's what a mole is. You build with rocks this pathway or causeway through the water. And the mole immense wrought on over the foaming deep, high arched, a bridge of length prodigious, joining to the wall immovable of this now fenceless world, forfeit to death. From hence a passage broad, smooth, easy, inoffensive, down to hell. Wow, a passage broad. So, if great things to small may be compared, Xerxes, the liberty of Greece to yoke from Susa, his Memnonian palace high, came to the sea and over the Hellespont, bridging his way, Europe with Asia joined. This is an allusion to Xerxes, one of the Persian kings. This is the king that Esther was married to. This is Xerxes, one of the Persian kings. He was looking to yoke the liberty of Greece, in other words, to take over Greece, and he's trying to get from Asia, because Persia is in Asia, from his capital at Susa and his palace high, he goes across Asia, he goes to the Hellespont, the place where Europe and Asia meet, and bending his way, line 310, Europe with Asia joined, so he's going to the Hellespont, and this is what Xerxes did. Scourged with many a stroke the indignant waves. Xerxes was so furious with the sea for not allowing him to pass over, he had servants go and beat the sea with sticks in his arrogance and command the sea to obey him. So if great things to small may be compared, line 306, we are comparing the little puny Xerxes, who was so arrogant, to who could do nothing with his staff or whatever he struck the water with, and comparing him to death, who simply strikes with his mace and everything happens. Now had they brought the work by wondrous art pontifical. And of course, pontifical in this instance, since you're not talking about a pope, it's not just an adjective referring to something a pope does. Pontifical here means haughty or arrogant. They brought the work by wondrous art pontifical, a ridge of pendant rock over the vexed abyss, following the track of Satan, to the selfsame place where he first lighted from his wing and landed safe from out of chaos to the outside, bare of this round world, with pins of adamant, which is the hardest metal or element, and here it is diamond, and chains they made all fast, too fast they made and durable, and now in little space the confines met of empyrean heaven. And so now they have made it to out of hell and of this world, and on the left hand hell with long reach interposed, three several ways in sight to each of these three places led. That is another classical allusion, the three ways. You go into the underworld, and there is the Astaroth, the fields of Astaphel, where everybody goes. Then you have the Isle of the Blessed, where the very lucky go. And the other spot is the Elysian Fields. Three different places in the underworld, and Milton is just reflecting that. When you look back on hell, there's three several ways in sight to each of these three places led. And now their way to earth they had descried, to paradise first tending. When behold, Satan, in likeness of an angel bright, betwixt the centaur and the scorpion, these are astronomical constellations, steering his zenith while the sun in Aries rose. Disguised he came, 330, but those his children dear, their parents soon discerned, though in disguise. He, after Eve seduced, unminded, slunk into the wood fast by, and changing shape, to observe the sequel, saw his guileful act by Eve, though all unweeting, seconded upon her husband, saw their shame that sought vain covertures, but when he saw descend the Son of God to judge them, terrified he fled. Not hoping to escape, but shun the present, fearing guilty what his wrath might suddenly inflict. That passed, returned by night, and listening where the hapless pair sat in their sad discourse and various plaint, hence gathered his own doom, which understood not instant but of future time. With joy and tidings fraught, to hell he now returned. So the narrator gives us an idea. They see Satan returning. And where is he returning from? He's returning from, and the narrator reminds us, from he had just seduced Eve, he slunk by in the woods and changed shape so he could observe the sequel, which is Adam eating, then saw their shame, but when he saw the Son of God coming to judge them, he was terrified and ran, but he did come back at night. He returned by night, and listening where the hapless pair sat in their sad discourse, and he learned not only their various plaints, their complaints, he also gathered his own doom, which he understood to be not instant, but of a future time. So he's thrilled with that, and he's now coming back to hell, and at the brink of chaos, 2, 3, 7, or 8, near the foot of this new wondrous pontifice, unhoped, met who to meet him came, his offspring dear. Great joy was at their meeting, and at sight of that stupendous bridge, his joy increased. Long he admiring stood, till Sin, his fair enchanting daughter, thus the silence broke. And Sin says to Satan, O parent, these are thy magnific deeds, 355. Thy trophies, which thou viewest as not thine own, thou art their author and prime architect, 356.